Muslim and Hindu students in India face off on the right to wear headscarves in class. So, is this a religious issue or a broader debate on minority rights and identity in India? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. India's constitution guarantees a secular state and religious freedom. But minority Muslims say they face increasing harassment and discrimination from the Hindu majority. The latest controversy revolves around a ban on headscarves in school. It started last month when six Muslim female students in Karnataka state protested against being barred from class. Hindu students held counter demonstrations wearing scarves in saffron, a color associated with Hindu nationalism. Right-wing groups have been accused of fueling the dispute. The state has shut down schools until Friday while its high court considers the issue. We'll bring in our guests in a moment, but first, this report from Pavni Mittal in New Delhi.
Videos that define the growing tensions in the state of Karnataka in southern India. Students aligned with Hindu groups heckle a woman for wearing a burqa as competing religious chants are heard.
Every religion has freedom. They're following their culture and I'm following mine. They should let us follow our culture and not raise obstacles for us.
A few weeks ago, six teenage students were barred from wearing headscarves in the classroom. Those protests have now spread across the state, with more women demanding the right to cover their heads in class. Opposing them are Hindu groups. They've been marching wearing saffron-coloured scarves and shawls, and some hoisted a saffron flag. The colour is considered sacred by many Hindus.
Uniform is same for everyone, whether it is Hindu, Muslim or Christian. They should abide and wear uniform, and the hijab has to be kept outside the gate.
The state government, run by Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Bharatiya Janata Party, has supported school and college administrators in banning Muslim girls wearing headscarves in class. The row has reignited the debate about minority rights in India.
That these Hindu supremacist groups are the same, you know, the self-same groups that since 2008 attack women in the same coastal Karnataka area for visiting pubs, for wearing Western clothes. Valentine's Day is coming up and the same groups will be out on the streets heckling couples, lovers who are sitting together and saying that you're not allowed to fraternize with somebody who's not your husband and so on. So these are extremely regressive groups. There is nothing feminist about their objection to hijab. They are merely trying to prevent any, shrink the spaces for Muslims in colleges and shrink the spaces for interaction between Hindu and Muslim.
The state government closed all high schools and colleges until Friday, while the High Court judges hear legal arguments and decide whether or not the law on constitutional freedoms is being broken. Pavni Mittal, Al Jazeera, New Delhi.
All right, let's bring in our guests in New Delhi. Fatima Khan, a journalist at The Quint. In Doha, Uday Chandra, assistant professor of government at Georgetown University. And also in New Delhi, Anas Tanvir, advocate at the Supreme Court of India and founder of the Indian Civil Liberties Union. A warm welcome to you all, and thank you so much for being on the program today. Fatima, let me start with you. How did all this begin in Karnataka? Did it all just start in the past month with a handful of students protesting after they were told they couldn't attend school if they were wearing the hijab, or were there other incidents as well?
Well, it started with six odd young women, Muslim women, who've been wearing the hijab for years now, waking up one day, incidentally, around New Year's, going to their college and being told by their class teacher that you will not be allowed inside this classroom until and unless you take off your hijab. And that is it. And they said that, no, this is unacceptable. Hijab is a part of our identity. Hijab is a part of our religion, our faith. And it isn't obstructing you or your classes in any way or form. So let us in. But they were told not to enter with that piece of cloth on their head. And that is it. And these girls, they took it upon themselves to protest against this arbitrary, absolutely arbitrary policy that was placed in that college, in that one college. Incidentally, it was a government college, a public institution, not a private institution. And in that very moment, they said that, look, there cannot be any such policy because as per our fundamental rights, we are allowed to express ourselves, wear the kind of clothes that we want to, in a way that isn't harming you in any way or form. One, that protest eventually snowballed into national news. It became national news, and multiple other colleges, pre-university colleges, decided to one day just stop Muslim women from entering if they're wearing the hijab.
Uday, Fatima there was mentioning the difference between whether it's a state institution or a private institution when it comes to wearing the hijab. I want to ask you, I want to take a step back for a moment. Were female students in Karnataka State allowed to wear headscarves to class before that? Did it depend upon what kind of institution they were going to? And also, is asking a Muslim woman not to wear a hijab in Karnataka or other parts of India a violation of their rights as citizens?
It's definitely a violation of their fundamental rights, as Fatima said. I mean, I think the Constitution gives everyone an equal right to practice and propagate their religion. And there has never been an issue with people wearing, a Sikh man wearing a turban or a Muslim woman wearing a headscarf. And I really see that this is a kind of deliberate and mischievous ploy. And Karnataka is very much a test ground for certain tactics, really, political tactics, which I suppose before the next national election, there is a big push for a uniform civil code. And this is something that the current regime in India would like to actually see.
Anas, from your perspective, does banning the hijab in these schools go against the constitutional rights of these students?
Indeed, it does go against the constitutional right of these students. But most importantly, this is not per se a matter where, I mean, obviously the constitutional rights are being violated, but they are being violated without the state having any legal power to do so. The college has never prescribed any uniform. It's not that the students are going against the set norms or going against the uniform or rebelling now. They have always practiced observed hijab. The state has no legal standing. The law in the state of Karnataka, the Education Act, does not give any power to regulate uniform of the students. The law only regulates the institutions. And even if there is a mention of uniform, it is only with regard to giving power to the school to bring in any uniform, which this school has not done yet. So this whole exercise where they are prohibiting and stopping, sometimes violently, these students from entering college while wearing hijab is unconstitutional and against all the set norms of the law.
Fatima, from your vantage point, these tensions between Hindus and Muslims, I mean, obviously that's nothing new. But the fact that these long-running tensions are now playing out among a different generation, among younger people, that it's affecting students and not just middle-aged politicians or policymakers. What does that say to you about the state of things in India right now?
It's horrific. It's absolutely unfortunate. You know, I speak to so many young Muslims as part of my job because I cover communalism, I cover social justice, and so many of them have said that in the last 5 years, 7 odd years, they have lost their friends, they have lost their closest friends, people who they never thought would turn out to be bigots, would turn out to be ignorant. But today they see them leading this charge of bigotry, leading this charge of anti-Muslim hate, anti-Muslim vitriol. They've lost their closest friends. And I feel personally, when I talk to them, I see in their eyes that nothing can be more heartbreaking than that. Not who's leading this country, not who's in power, but just the fact that the people who you thought would never leave your side like that, would never one day turn around and say these things. In fact, the visual that I'd urge your viewers to see, this young girl wearing the hijab, entering her college, driving to her college on a scooty. She's then trying to enter her class, enter her school, and these 30, 40 young odd men, extremely just young boys, wearing the saffron shawls, heckling her, harassing her, bullying her from entering, chanting slogans of Jai Shri Ram, she still managed to hold her head high and walks in. And later in an interview, she said that, you know, some of them, many of them were outsiders, but some of them were her classmates, people she recognized. Imagine the trauma that an episode like that can leave you with, because it's not some vague authority who you're rebelling against. Suddenly your friends, your classmates.
Uday, I saw a tweet of yours where I believe you were referring to some of these students that videos have emerged, showing them as they're trying to go to class and being heckled by others there, by other male students, many of them wearing these saffron robes, heckling the women that are in the hijab. And in one of your tweets, you said that some of these female protesters are showing more courage than the entire opposition in India, which cannot raise this matter on the eve of a critical election. Why, in your opinion, can the opposition not bring this issue up?
Well, I think the BJP, the ruling party, has really changed the political discourse. Increasingly, you have the Congress party trying to also say Hinduism is different from Hindutva, which it is, perhaps. But I think we have to accept that many of our Hindu classmates and neighbors and compatriots are sympathizers of this kind of communal violence and this kind of politics. And the opposition is not willing to take it on because they recognize that society has moved in a majoritarian direction. So they find that electorally, there is no incentive for them beyond a few rhetorical gestures, perhaps, or the odd tweet, but they are not going to make this into a major election issue. They are not going to make this into a big debate about the idea of India itself.
Anas, let me ask you about the fact that the High Court, which is hearing a petition by Muslim girls to allow the use of hijabs in educational institutions, they referred the case to a bigger panel of judges. Was that expected? And from your vantage point, what happens now?
So the matter was referred by a single judge to a larger bench, as it is called here. And the larger bench continued the hearing today. Some really good submissions were made from the side of petitioners. While there was argument and demand for an interim relief, that while the court hears the matter, let the girls attend the college. Let them observe their hijab and enter the college. Let them continue with their study because they have their practical exams from, if I remember correctly, from 15th onwards. So, however, the court was not inclined to grant that relief. The matter is now listed for consideration and argument on Monday. And from my understanding of it, the law stands. As the law stands, the court should, in all fairness, decide in favor of the petitioners, because this is their constitutional fundamental right. It is their right to expression. Supreme Court has held what you wear is also part of your right to privacy, and obviously it is also right to life and liberty. No such action can be, no law, no action, no executive action can be taken which is in contravention of the fundamental rights. And that is the case today. They have taken action for which they never had power and which contravenes the constitution.
Fatima, whenever this ruling is delivered, will there be other legal avenues available to the female students after the ruling is made? Where might the case go from here?
No, legally, I think Anas is more well-placed to expound on those issues. But I think socially, whatever the ruling may be, right, these visuals, just look at these visuals. Imagine a country where this is playing out in 21st century, 2022, where a young woman cannot enter her class at a time when, you know, we have had the conversations about women's access to education for centuries now. And suddenly we are still having to argue that a section of a certain community should or should not be allowed access. And I would like to bring this in. Unfortunately, the discourse in India is such that it has shifted from that being about fundamental rights that we're discussing here tonight to about being, you know, should women be wearing the hijab or not? Is it something that they should be wearing? Is it something that they've been forced to wear or not? The kind of conversation, it's really astounding to me personally. Do you think those 30, 40 young boys for heckling that girl. Are they feminists of some sort? Are they purveyors of some feminist values who are suddenly having this conversation about choice versus conditioning? No, they are men who are harassing her purely by virtue of being a Muslim woman. And we have to see this in the larger context of what has been happening with Muslims in the country. In Karnataka specifically, there have been laws brought in against conversion, a forceful conversion, so to say, but they've been used as a pretext to raid churches one after another. In Muslim men in interfaith relationships have been harassed and abused because they've been forced, they've been accused of forcefully converting a Muslim, non-Muslim women. Just a couple of months ago, just earlier this year and 6 months before that, a list was brought out where, you know, Muslim women, prominent Muslim women, journalists, activists, poets were auctioned online. I incidentally happened to be on both of those lists. So you have to see this in just this whole tide of disturbing events, one after the other, against Muslims.
Uday, I just want to go back for a moment to the issue of these state elections that have begun, that are going to be playing out in phases. First of all, I'm curious to know how much you think the religious issues will become a part of these elections. Will the headscarf issue be a much bigger part of the elections? And also, do you believe that political actors are going to be trying to capitalize on these rising tensions?
I think the BJP has, it's had to campaign online in recent weeks. And I think this is something through the TV studios and their allies in the media. I think they're very keen to bring this up, to communalize the UP election. They don't want to focus on the incompetence and the poor development that the last 5 years in UP has brought. So they want a diversionary narrative. And Karnataka has yielded that narrative. I don't think it's as important an issue in Punjab, because after all, Sikhs could say that wearing the turban is also their fundamental right. And it was an issue in the 1980s where these kinds of things were, where Sikhs, the anti-Sikh politics took place. But today, this is not an issue. So I don't think it's going to have a spillover effect in Goa or in Punjab.
Anas, from your vantage point, is what we're seeing happening right now, what's playing out in Karnataka, is this unprecedented?
This is not unprecedented. Since 8 years now, almost, there has been laws to victimize Muslims. There have been action by non-state actors to victimize Muslims. We have seen a spike in genocidal speeches. We have seen that even the namaz in Gurgaon was obstructed, and the state looks the other side, either looks the other side if he when there's an attack by a non-state actors, or when there's harassment of Muslims, either they look the other side or they're complicit in it. And it is not something surprising. They have a problem with the Muslim identity, and a Muslim woman wearing, observing hijab is an assertion of her identity as a Muslim. And that assertion, while protected by the constitution, makes these goons, I'll call them goons, makes these goons very nervous. And this is a trend towards victimization and pushing Muslims to the sideline.
Fatima, how concerned are you right now that the attacks on religious identity have escalated this much?
I'm very concerned, you know, because in the last couple of weeks, I focused my reporting on Uttar Pradesh, which incidentally is going for elections today. And what I found is that large-scale riots that used to be commonplace in India have been replaced by events like these. So imagine a Muslim woman, a young Muslim girl sitting in any part of the country, watching these visuals play out. What kind of an impact would it have on her psychologically? You know, it is essentially sending out a message that, look, we can do anything with you at any point of time. We can snatch away any of the rights that you took for granted, and you won't be able to do anything about it. So that kind of psychological messaging, I'd say, is much more dangerous than a concerted, localized riot or communal violence, because it leaves a much more, a longer impact. And, you know, the prime minister, he's repeatedly, one of the catchphrases of this government have been Beti Bachao Beti Padhao, which means save the girl child, educate the girl child. But at this point of time, if you're even debating it, Muslim women wearing the hijab should be allowed access into a classroom, we're clearly taking many, many hundred steps backwards.
Uday, I saw you nodding along to a lot of what Fatima was saying there. So it looks like you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
You know, I completely agree with what Fatma's just said, and I really think that the rule of law is now on trial. And I think, you know, the fact that this the High Court in Karnataka has deferred the issue itself, I think, is a problem. And I think that, you know, they could have easily said that these girls should be able to wear whatever they want and carry on with their exams and classes. But they chose not to do this. And they chose to make it an issue where both sides seem to have equally valid arguments. And I think that is already a problem. And, you know, I think that when fundamental rights are being violated with impunity, it sends a very bad message. And it's the same message that was sent when namaz in open spaces was targeted in Gurgaon, just next to Delhi. So I think there are a number of these incidents, micro-level incidents in different localities and states, which come together in cyberspace to create a certain atmosphere, which Fatima said is an atmosphere of fear, of intimidation, and ultimately lawlessness, because it says that the law is not going to protect the minorities and the Dalits. And we have to talk about that there are people who are not being protected by the law, and they are citizens of this country. And it really is a huge problem if there are large parts of the citizenry mm-hmm. that are unprotected by the law and the constitution.
Anas, at its heart, this really has reignited the debate about the rights of India's minorities under the Hindu nationalist government, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And I will agree with what Uday said. It is the rule of law that is on trial, and I'll extend it to the fact that it is courts that are on trial. Lately, see, the democratic setup that is in India, the courts become the sentinel QV, that is the custodian of the constitution. The minorities are protected by that constitution, and that constitution is protected by the courts. But if the courts look the other way, or if they are not actively protecting minorities, protecting those who are endangered, protecting those who are oppressed, the situation will come to what it has already come, where anyone has the power to heckle a Muslim girl going to school or going to college. Or if those voices are raised, those voices are shut down by saying that we also have a right to wear saffron shawls. Then I say no one is stopping you from wearing that. But you cannot take away the right of a Muslim woman to wear her hijab. So this is an attack on the identity. This is an attack on the democratic and constitutional setup of India.
Fatima, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but let me just ask you, do you think that we're going to see these protests and counter-protests growing in the weeks ahead?
I think so. I think so that in the last few years, if you remember 2020, the Delhi communal violence, the riots where Muslims were targeted, at that point of time, it also started as, a bunch of people who support the government, who support the BJP, starting this counter protest against people who were protesting, Muslims predominantly protesting against the Citizenship Amendment Act. And that protest, counter protest, it eventually snowballed or was actively manufactured, orchestrated in such a way that it snowballs into a riot-like situation in the national capital. So I think until and unless a court actively tries to intervene and step in and give these women the rights that they are demanding, which are basic rights, I'm afraid, I'm really, really afraid of what this could eventually snowball into.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thank you so much to all of our guests, Fatima Khan, Uday Chandra, and Anas Tanvir. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jim Jewelman, and the whole team here, bye for now.